Greetings from a rainy and somewhat cool but very humid Belgium. My name is Jonathan Westerling, and I am broadcasting live from the studios of Radionomy in Brussels, Belgium. And we have the first of three wonderful interviews for you, which we've arranged to give you a little taste of the jazz scene here in Brussels. Why? Because it is surprisingly vibrant. In my explorations of this vacation, I'm here not just to produce these interviews, but also to enjoy myself here in Belgium. And I've always been surprised at the musical richness of this city, Brussels, and the country of Belgium. So very excited to explore this with some people who have been really a core, or have become a core part of this this scene here. And tomorrow we will have Quentin Dujardin, who is going to be playing some live guitar for us and talking about his melodies from around the world. On Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, Jean-Paul Estivener is a young trumpet virtuoso who's going to be joining us and talking about what it's like to learn about jazz as a young musician here in Europe. However, it is my pleasure to welcome to the Radionomy in Radio Sausalito Studios Michel Herr, who is an accomplished band leader and composer, celebrating the 200th birthday of the inventor of the saxophone with several pizzas for saxophone. We'll be talking about that later here in the broadcast. But Michel, welcome to Radio Sausalito, and thank you so much for joining.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, that's very good. I've actually gone through a full workday here, and it will be getting dark soon. But of course, due to the time difference, it's 9 a.m. in California, and so people are hopefully waking up to us here. And I've invited you on and had you here first because you are a big band leader and have been involved in the big band scene more recently here in Belgium, which is just wonderful. And you have your own big band, right?
Well, actually, I've wrote for several big bands, but I made an album under my name with a famous band from Belgium, which is the Brussels Jazz Orchestra, you know, well-known band. And I did a double album with my own compositions, which was released recently.
Wonderful. But
I write for all kinds of bands, you know, in the jazz field. And big band is just one of the things, but things for smaller bands, chamber orchestras with jazz bands, and all kinds of combinations.
I will look forward to learning all about that this hour. Hope you'll stay with us here on Radio Sausalito. But let's start with one of your compositions from that double album you just mentioned. It's with the Brussels Jazz Orchestra. This is called Springboard. Anything you want to mention about this track? It leads off the CD.
Exactly. It's a very active and dynamic piece. Enjoy it.
Fantastic. Here's Springboard on Radio Sausalito. Here we go. Brussels Jazz Orchestra here on Radio Sausalito. That was Springboard, the first track off their double CD set, with all music composed, arranged, and conducted by my guest today, Michel Herr. And that was fantastically huge, complex orchestration. How much of that is written down, and how much of it was improvised? Because you have a big band, and you have some solos that are probably improvised, but did you wrote every single one of those notes, how does that all work for some of us who may not know about what it's like to compose fresh music? Not like, you know, Duke Ellington had the theme, and we all recognize that, but these days, is it more complicated?
Yeah, actually, it's, you know, it follows the same tradition. Actually, you have a theme which is completely written out and arranged, and then some improvised solos, as you said, behind which you write some backgrounds. So these are written too, but they can interact with the soloist in front, who has the freedom to do what he wants to do. And then comes the head at the end, or, you know, different ways to do it. But, I mean, basically, it's still in the tradition of jazz music.
So by the tradition, you mean the same type of music that you're writing is the same thing that Duke Ellington was doing, and Glenn Miller and those sorts of big bands. They're doing the same thing that you were doing.
It's an extension, actually. But, of course, we wouldn't do this if these people didn't do what they did, you know.
That's true. No, you're building on top of that. Sure. Can you use computers at all to make your life a little more simpler than it was for them?
Oh, yeah. Now, all the music we write is written on the computer, okay, for sure.
And so do you get to actually hear the music before it's played by the big band, or do you wait and print it out and then have them play it?
I can have an ID with synthesized sounds, which are quite realistic, but not, of course, not the real thing. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, I have much more fun when I hear it played with real guys.
So then the question, of course, is if Duke Ellington, if Glenn Miller, if his arrangers and composers had this technology, do you think it would have changed the music that they came up with at all? Do you think that makes yours, you have a benefit over them because you have this technology, or is it just the same? It's about the music either way.
Yeah, it's about the music, yeah. First of all. You know, their talent would be, you know, just the same. The only thing is that when you hear stuff that you've written, you can interact on top of what you've written, you know, even add or change things, you know. But Duke Ellington would do that because he played the same pieces over and over, and he did several versions of Take the A-Train, for instance, you know.
I was having a discussion recently with someone who plays in a big band, and they talked about how, for some composers, they change the chart, the tune, if you will, over time. For example, Miles Davis, you know, had his famous album 53 years ago now, Kind of Blue, but each time he played that song, it was a little bit different. Is the same thing true at all for you? Are you going to change that chart we just heard for in future releases, or do you sort of consider that a finished thing?
Some will be finished and remain in, you know, in the state there are. Some will be changed because I'm not completely pleased and I hear some other stuff, you know, on top of it.
Are any of the songs on this CD that I have here, do you think you're going to change any of these? And what is it that makes you unhappy with them? Why would you want to change it? It's on CD now. It's done, right?
Yeah, well, I'm happy with that, for
okay,
sure.
Okay.
Don't worry. But it's clear that when you hear a piece played the first time, sometimes you hear, oh, maybe I could have done it slightly different, you know, a different way in this place or in this place. But, I mean, this is, if you go to a recording studio to record an album, of course, it's come to a point where it's mature, you know.
Mm-hmm. You have done a lot of work in recording studios, including working with Joe Lovano, and I want to talk about that in just a minute. But before we do, the big band in Europe, how is it in the U.S.? It's sort of the big bands play a lot of standards. They're called to dance parties and what have you, because it's the Ellington band, because it's the Glenn Miller band, it's a swing dance band or whatever. This, what we just heard, was definitely a more contemporary sound. So is there, do the big bands here in Europe play more standards, or is there a lot of innovation going on in that, so with that sort of instrumentation?
It depends on the big bands. You have these kinds of big bands like the Brussels Jazz Orchestra, which actually do some original stuff, and they just released an album with Joe Lovano, by the way.
Oh, wow.
You know, and many American soloists. So each album is like a concept album, and it's supposed to be, you know, trying new things and going into new ground.
Cool. Let's talk then about Joe Lovano, because did you facilitate that cooperation with the Brussels Big Band through your connection
with him? No, I'm good friends with Joe. Actually, we met in the 80s when he was on in Europe, and we did an album. Actually, it's the first album done in the studio as a leader with people from musicians from Belgium and Holland. And I was happy to be part of it as a pianist because I have a career as a pianist for many years.
This was in the 80s, and yeah. And so were you? He was here. He was performing in Europe then.
I was traveling here, you know, just doing clinics and concerts.
And what was your first interaction with him in terms of hearing him? Were you aware of him before you ran into
him? Yes, sure. We knew him, of course. We made a...
Because he hadn't recorded any solo CDs by that time, I don't think, right?
As a leader in the studio, not yet, actually. Uh-huh. That's quite surprising.
And so was he up and coming, or he just hadn't?
Yeah, he was coming, actually.
But you heard of him, and you wanted
to... Yes, we knew him, you know. He was playing with Thad Jones Mel Lewis, so, I mean, you know, you couldn't miss him.
So did you first... where did you first hear him live, when you were working with him, or before that?
I guess we did a workshop together, and there were jam sessions during the night, so... Maybe that's where I actually got to know him real close.
And we're going to hear a CD, a track from this CD from 1986. This was the CD that we're talking about,
yes.
Your first interaction with him. And then this was also his first studio CD. The tune is called Gustavia.
Gustavia.
Gustavia. Yeah. And it's by Joe.
By Joe.
How did that come about in the studio? You showed up and he gave you the music, or did you have some time to prepare it?
Yeah, we did a couple. Of rehearsals, and each of the musicians brought a couple of tunes. I brought two, and the bass player two, and the trumpet player two. So Bert Joris and Hein van der Geijn, André Palamats on drums. So and Joe brought his own stuff too.
And I'll mention that two of those tunes ended up on the final release for Joe's first studio album. That's H&C's Dance and also Pretext, which was not on the vinyl album, but it was on the CD, right? Pretext.
Oh, they were both on the vinyl. I'm not sure, actually.
This is 1986, so we can excuse
that. Yeah, good excuse.
It's very good. And anything anything particular that we should listen to in your playing?
Well, no, I think I have a solo in the piece, if I remember, because I don't listen to my records every day.
Let's find out. This is Joe Lovano, Solid Steps. The track is called Gustavia, and it's right here as you stay tuned to our live broadcast from Brussels, Belgium. I'm Jonathan Westerling. It's a pleasure to have here in the studio Michel Herr. This is him playing piano with Joe Lovano on Radio Sausalito. Joe Lovano here on Radio Sausalito from his 1986 album, Solid Steps. Gustavia and the composer of that piece, Michel Herr, with me here in studio, live from Brussels on Radio Sausalito. Thank you for joining us for this special first of three live broadcasts. You'll want to join us again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and also Wednesday as well for two more interviews with jazz. The lights, some of the bright lights here in the jazz scene in Belgium. My name is Jonathan Westerling. Thank you so much for being with me. And Michel, the very cool working there with and hearing those sounds from 1986 and Joe Lovano, because like you were saying while we were listening, all those guys on that album are now very famous and big names in the industry, and have gone, including yourself, have gone a long way in music.
Yeah, well, each of them has become a reference in his own field. You know, Hein van der Heijn is a Dutch bass player, outstanding.
Probably not a familiar name to the jazzers in the Bay Area, but yes, indeed, a big name over here in Europe. Yes.
Yeah, sure. He plays with Didi Bridgewater. Mm-hmm. And the trumpet player is Bertie Orris, who an outstanding arranger as well.
Very good. You, on that song, were playing piano, and the next thing we're going to hear is a piece, a trio piece that you perform, that you composed for piano, bass, and drums. After that, we're going to talk a little bit about the 200th birthday of Adolf Sachs, which is for which you're involved with. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about the piano, because it's your primary instrument. Presumably, it's what you grew up with, and this was before composing and arranging. This was how you paid the bills, as we say.
Yeah, well, I mean, I developed both activities in parallel, actually. Okay. I started as a pianist, but very quickly I got interested in writing and form my own bands and tried a few things, arrangements right there, for my own bands.
And you were mostly an ensemble player. You played in other groups, or did you do solo work as well?
Not solo so much, mm-hmm. but I played as a leader or as a sideman. I was lucky to have played with many American players who were on tour in Europe, like Joe Henderson, Chet Baker, and Johnny Griffin, and the list is extremely long.
And how would you get those calls? How did you, were you on someone's Rolodex, someone very important, or did they hear about you? How does that happen?
Yeah, in the Belgian scene, I think I was a modern player who could fit, with some of the new guys in the state, from the States. So the agents knew that, so they called me to, work with these great players.
And so you lived by the phone. Very clearly. And when did you transition more towards the away from the piano thing?
Well, I mean, I stopped playing the piano a few years ago, like 5 years ago, and I just focused on writing and arranging and composing. So that's my main activity these days.
And that's just due to a sort of your flexibility? You've done what you needed to do with the music? Or you may have some health issues that are interfering with the playing?
Yeah, that was the main reason. But I was lucky to have in parallel this second activity, which now becomes my first, and I do lots of work, and I'm very busy writing for all kinds of jazz projects, including things with large ensembles like the Metropole Orchestra in Holland and big bands in Europe and things with chamber orchestras, but always with jazz people in the project.
Mm-hmm. But now I'm a musician. I have an instrument that's not a jazz instrument, but I think if I could no longer play my instrument, I would be absolutely devastated. Can you still play enough? Do you use it as a compositional tool, or is this really something that you've had to really give up?
I had to give up. Wow. Really, seriously. But I mean, I'm lucky to have this second, thing to do in my life, which is actually fulfilling.
Okay, good. The tune that we're going to hear next is called Labyrinth, and it's on a trio that you composed. Can you tell us a little bit about this track and the piano playing that we're going to hear here? Because it's going to be very different from what we heard just before with Joe.
Yes, Hein van der Heijn on bass and Leroy Lowe from the States, a guy who lived in Sweden, on drums.
Where is he based in the U.S.?
He was in the U.S., I don't know. Washington, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
He lived in Sweden. So this track actually is an up-tempo thing, very, you know, spectacular. And actually received the prize in Monaco for the composition prize of jazz themes some time ago.
And this is on the CD, the label Igloo.
Exactly.
Which I don't think people in the U.S. have heard about, but this is a major label here in Europe.
In Belgium, yeah. You can probably get it, you know, on the web.
Oh, sure. No, they definitely, these days, everything's available online. But this Igloo is the premier jazz label in terms
of number of releases, I would say, yes.
Very good. And this Labyrinth is inspired by... we should ask that question. Is your music generally inspired by things you hear in your head or things you hear outside in the world? Or where does this music come to you?
Yeah, from experiences of my life, you know, just things I've lived and, you know, things that mattered.
But these are not necessarily musical things. I mean, you go to the store and you go shopping for something. Does music come to you? How does this work as a composer, someone whose job it is to come up with melodies? Where do you get where do you find these melodies? Where do you pick them out of the air?
Oh, boy, that's hard to answer.
Didn't say it was going to be easy questions.
No. Well, the answer is even more difficult than the question. I don't know. It's just it's coming on from playing on the piano, getting some ideas, and then putting them into shape. And then the last stage is, you know, finding a title which corresponds in a way to the music that you...
Does the music always come before the title for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. Although it comes from a mood, you know, and the mood finally gives the title as well.
So we're going to hear a labyrinth of ideas here, or a labyrinth of sounds? No, a labyrinth of
yeah, you will see changes, atmospheres and grooves.
This is Labyrinth.
Don't get lost.
we'll see you in about 5 minutes here on Radio Sausalito. Michel Herr is my guest live from Belgium as we explore his many facets and capabilities. And when we come back, we'll hear a little bit more about what he's been doing with the saxophone. For now, his trio work, this is from his album in 1989 called Intuitions. Michel Herr on Radio Sausalito. a labyrinth of notes there from Michel Herr and his tune Labyrinth here on Radio Sausalito. My name is Jonathan Westerling. I'm coming to you with Michel here in studio live from Radionomy in Brussels, Belgium, and it is such a pleasure. We're off the air talking about some various parts of the jazz scene here in Brussels, and I want to get to more of that as well. So much to talk about, and also some more to listen to as well with a quintet disc that he did that was only available here in Europe. We're going to play that for you as well here on Radio Sausalito. We were talking a little bit because you also do, one of the things that you do to make money is compose for TV. And here we are listening to some of this. Now, that track was probably about 20 years ago, but you spend a lot of time writing for television and movies now, right?
Yeah, it's still occasional. But I did a few films, you know, like full duration films, fiction for films for television. But that's 1 month of work, and then you do something else, so you come back to, you know, real jazz in a way, you know.
But this is something that is probably very lucrative. At least I know it is in the States.
It is, and of course, when it's played on the air, it gets you some author's rights in Europe, you know, which is substantial.
And what we just heard was obviously a very complex jazz tune for a jazz trio. How does that, do you, I don't mean to diminish the importance of it, but do you kind of dumb that down a little bit for TV? When you're writing for TV, it's got to be a completely different thing.
Exactly, completely different. Actually, you're writing functional music when you write for a film. You're just serving the purpose of the story and the atmospheres and the ideas of the director. You're not doing an ego trip. You're just serving a context.
And in music, sometimes we say if you're showing up to a gig that you really don't want to be at, it's called cashing the check. But you, I can tell, do get some sort of fulfillment from that, from, even though it's not as free-flowing, let's say, as some of the jazz stuff that you do. There's a reward in that as well, not just financial.
Yeah, first of all, if they call me, it means that, you know, they need something of my personality put into the music, which I, of course, do, you know, whatever. So, but it's also the occasion to do, the opportunity to try a few things in different styles of music, different instrumentations, different combination of instruments. So I've learned from it too, you know. And of course, you know, the discipline of having to deal with time and precise durations, you know.
This is another point that I want to ask about, because what you end up performing, particularly in movies, is sometimes incredibly short. It's less than a minute of music, and so you have to come up with a melody, a concept there that lives within itself. How can you build an idea that's so quick like that? That had to have been something you developed. It doesn't come naturally to someone who's used to, you know, playing 5-10 minute big band charts or piano tunes.
Yes, let's say music, like film music, is like 35 minutes in 1.5 hours. So you talk with a director, and then you decide of a few themes. Some will be associated to a character, some will be associated to an action, suspense, a chase, and then from these materials which you write at the beginning, you take some bits and pieces, combine them to fit the 27 seconds that you need at a specific moment, you know. It's just that's that way.
Do you get to go to the recording studio and help, or maybe do you even conduct it?
I conduct and I play, you know. I do it myself from beginning to the end.
And in the U.S., I know, or at least I've heard from, I have some folks I went to school with at Conservatory who are now involved in the film scoring business. And we have a big studio in Marin, Lucasfilms. Mm-hmm. I know the person who runs that film scoring studio. And this industry, if you will, the film industry, the video game industry, the movie industry, is one that you have to break your way into because of who you know, not really what you can do these days. It's one of those things where you start by apprenticing with someone, and then you learn who they know, and you develop a reputation that way. Here we are in Europe, broadcasting here from Brussels, and I'm wondering if here it's a little more altruistic. It's not about who you know, but what you can do. Is there, or is it still an industry where you have to make your way in and do your time you know, just copying notes or whatever it is to kind of get yourself into it.
Yeah, it's similar and different at the same time, because I think, you know, the film industry here is different and the music is conceived in another way, in another approach, more human in terms of dimensions. You know, it's one person who is in charge of the whole music. In the States, you have a composer who sketches a few ideas and an orchestrator, takes over, and then copies, and then, you know. So here you have one guy who's in charge of everything.
And that's you.
And that's me, basically.
Wow. And so you get the call, and you do all of this in a month, you said. You can finish
the
project.
Yeah, you write a film music in 4 to 6 weeks maximum.
Yeah, working 24 hours a day, do you sleep?
Yeah, full time and recording in 1 week. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure.
Pages. I mean, you turn the page and go to something else.
Go to something else. How much of your work these days is film?
These days, not so much. Actually, I write, you know, quite basically and for jazz projects.
Okay. And speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about the birthday of Adolf Sachs. It's a big celebration here in Belgium anyway, and I'm sure it's filtered its way into the U.S. a little bit. It'll be more in November when his birthday actually occurs. But we have big celebrations about the man who invented this instrument. And it's a unique instrument because very few instruments that we play and use every day have one person who really was responsible for conceiving it, coming up with the invention, marketing it, trying to get pieces composed for it, and that's what happened right here in Belgium, or at least started in Belgium.
Exactly, and he actually invented more than the Sachs family. He wrote invented many instruments. So he worked mainly in Paris, I think, and got discovered there by Hector Berlioz, a composer, you know, French composer, who used his instruments. But he got recognition actually after he died, mostly, you know. And of course, saxophone has become one of the major voices in jazz. And each saxophone player in jazz has his own sound, which you can tell and recognize in just a few seconds, which is quite extraordinary.
But the music you're composing for this anniversary is it's called the Real Sax Section, arrangements by Michel Herr. And you're arranging, I guess in this case, for five saxophones, the music that hasn't been arranged for saxophone before.
Exactly. You know, this is a jazz project. And the five saxophones actually is just a typical section that you see in the front row of a big band, you know, with two altos, two tenors, one baritone. And it's lots of fun to do, you know, because you can do lots of things with these great instruments, which are very strong and flexible, you know, virtuosi, you know. So, and then the dimension, the jazz dimension, the solos in between.
And this is right now, unfortunately for our listeners in Sausalito and Marin and, well, around the world on the internet, I suppose if some of you are listening here in Belgium, you can go in and hear this performance, which is going to be premiered on August 3rd at 6:30 in the, you're going to have to help me, the Abbey of Stavolo.
L'Abbaye de Stavelot,
L'Abbaye de Stavelot, okay, good. We're very happy that this is happening in English, this interview, because obviously French is not going to work for me. This is a live performance, and how does this event come about? Is something that's associated with someone else is producing, or is this an initiative of yours?
In a framework of the 20th, you know, the 200th, thank you, anniversary of the birth of Adolf Sachs, I got this commission, you know, from a festival to write, you know, a jazz project which used the saxophone. And I thought the saxophone section was a great idea.
And we're going to hear one more piece from the big band before we close. But before we do that, I want to take a sample of your quintet work from this album that you put out, Notes of Life. This was not issued in the U.S. It's just from here in Brussels. And the tune we're going to hear is Distant Echoes. And we're not going to be able to play all of it, unfortunately, due to time. Yeah. But tell me a little bit about how this, which is you composed in the late 90s, how this people may be able to hear a little bit different voice that you've come up with, and maybe you've changed since the pieces that we've heard so far were from the 80s, were from 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for the first tune, of course.
Well, the title suggests a bit the idea of the piece, you know, echoes. You hear voices that, you know, have questions and answers in the melodies, and that's about it, you know.
And again, the tune came first, the label came later.
Absolutely.
Very good. This is Distant Echoes, Michel Herr's CD, Notes of Life, not released in the U.S., but heard here on Radio Sausalito. We'll get a sample of this and then come back and we'll close with some more big band music on Radio Sausalito. Michel Herr here on Radio Sausalito. That was an excerpt from Distant Echoes and the album Notes of Life. We have to cut it short because we have a limited amount of time, and I want to make sure that I talk about Toots Thielemann, who is one of the more famous, we just talked about Adolf Sax, a very famous Belgian jazz musician, but also Toots, of course, world-renowned. And Django Reinhardt was Belgian as well.
Yeah, was born in Belgium.
Was born and, of course, made his fame with the Hot Club of Paris. But Toots has really made a name for himself playing the harmonica, and in jazz has revolutionized that instrument's use. Absolutely. In jazz, and you had the pleasure of playing with him for so many years. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, he's a giant, you know. He's got a unique feeling for melody. He's a lyrical player. It's fantastic to have had the chance to play with him for so many years, all over the world, in Europe, in Japan, a couple of times in the United States. We played in the 90s in Oakland, you know.
Oakland, sure. That's across the bay from Sausalito.
Exactly.
Here. And so you were playing jazz clubs, or was he at that point, I guess in the 90s, he probably had a name and you were playing larger...
Oh, he had a huge name in Europe. We would play the biggest festivals and...
Thousands of people.
Yeah, sure.
And in Oakland, was do you remember anything about that tour? And
where? I don't know. It was a big club, but don't ask me the name.
That's all right. Today, we have we're lucky enough to have another jazz club in Oakland, Yoshi's, which is recent. Now they have one in San Francisco as well. So maybe next time you're visiting San Francisco, we do have a few jazz clubs. I didn't even have a chance to ask you about the jazz scene here. But just briefly, I certainly think the jazz scene is booming here in Brussels. Would you agree?
Yes, sure. And we have many talents. Maybe too many talents for the number of clubs, but I mean that's of course a thing that
too many talents is a generous place to be. And when your big band plays, which we're going to hear next, a track from your big band CD, they play larger venues because of the size of the ensemble.
Yeah, huge clubs and festivals. Yeah,
and we just finished a festival here in Belgium as well. I don't know if you had a chance to go down. It was near Liège, I think, the city of Liège.
Yeah.
And these types of jazz festivals, just fantastic, a full week, right? Not just a weekend.
Exactly, sure.
And lots of people showing up.
Several stages.
And you've got your sax program next, and then after that we'll talk a little bit in closing about some of the things that you may have in your future. Before we do that, I do want to make sure that we have time to hear another of the recent CD release, double CD set. This is Song for Lucy, track 6 from this 2007 double CD set featuring Michel Herr here on Radio Sausalito.
Thank you.
Brussels Jazz Orchestra here on Radio Sausalito. The music of Michel Herr, who joins me here in studio live from Brussels, and Adolf would be proud. That was one heck of a sax solo. That entire track was just wonderful. And that is on a two CD set, which is available from your website, I assume. Can we get this from your website?
Yes,
and
you can.
Why don't you give out your website if you want?
My website is quite easy. Michel Herr, M-I-C-H-E-L-H-E-R.com. That's it.
MichelHer.com, and Michel is M-I-C-H-E-L, hair with two R's, H-E-R-R.com. Thank you so much for joining us. What do you have in the, we have just a moment more. What you're doing the saxophone project, and then after that, continuing with some arrangements for big band, I think, right?
No, for jazz groups and groups. Chamber orchestras, and David Links, a singer, excellent singer. People from Switzerland, you know, nice project too.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us here on Radio Sausalito. It's a pleasure having you on our station.
And thanks for inviting
and
me.
If it's all right with you, I'm going to take this CD back. We're going to load it in our computers, and we'll play that big band tune that you just heard a lot. Thank you so much for doing
that.
And thank you all for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow with something very different, a different idea about the jazz scene here in Brussels. We have Quentin Dujardin, who is going to bring his guitar and play some live jazz guitar here in the Radionomy Studios in Brussels, Belgium. So we hope you'll join us for that. That's beginning at 9 tomorrow, Tuesday morning, here on Radio Sausalito. My name is Jonathan Westerling. It's been a pleasure having you with us as we continue these live broadcasts from Brussels, and we hope you'll certainly tune in and enjoy. And again, thank you to Michel Herr for joining us in studio. Thank you to Radionomy for the audio connection back to our studios in Sausalito, and thank you to Kieran O'Connor for manning the Radio Sausalito studios and doing the engineering back in California for us as we broadcast from Brussels. Also, a big thank you to Albert Delchambre for organizing all of these interviews. You're listening to Radio Sausalito, 1610 AM, a non-commercial Part 15 compliant radio station, broadcasting great music and community information 24 hours a day. You can hear us on 1610 AM in Southern Marin and 1710 AM Central San Rafael. Our FCC IDs, NWX AM 1000 and MQ5 FM 10TX, also heard on cable as the audio accompaniment for Marin TV. You can call our phone number and let us know what you thought at 415-332-JAZZ. From Brussels, Belgium, we'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'm Jonathan Westerling. Thank you so much for joining us, and back to the Radio Sausalito Studios.